Welcome back to Irreverent Testimony, the liberal talk show that makes Howard Stern sound like a right-wing pundit. We have a lot to talk about today. We have our GOP debate number two roundup. We did something very similar a few weeks ago, and I'm sure it'll be fun to talk about all the wonderful things they said. We also have a very special guest with us today, Miss Rachel Hutchison.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, and we're going to kind of build off of what we did a couple of weeks ago. We did a GOP debate roundup, part one, and so, of course, you may have seen it, although it was on CNN, so probably not. But there was another debate, and they said a lot of
Donald
things.
Donald Trump has the knack for setting off a media.
Well, before we get to that, a true story. I watched nearly all of the warm-up debate and the main debate. I subjected myself to that, and I came down with like the worst migraine headache of my life. And I thought I had like meningitis. I was so sick. I thought I was going to puke. Rachel was with me. She knows.
Seriously,
I was
awful. He looked green. It was awful.
And I was fine the next day, but I was like, I just don't know if these two things are coincidental.
Can't be, right?
Sitting through 5 hours of that was just too much for the normal human body and mind, or abnormal or whatever mine is, to absorb, I think.
It was awful.
There may be something to that. So you probably look about the same as Scott Walker did after the debate, right? Probably the same reaction.
Right, I look like Sloth. Like my right eye was like 2 inches higher than my left, and I had a huge bald spot. And
I have to say, you looked less smug.
I certainly looked less smug. Yeah,
like a 2% drop. You down to 96% smug level.
Exactly.
So,
but no, that really happened. I got violently ill, and I am questioning maybe next debate I'm going to have to just watch in small doses.
you know what? Honestly, it works better that way. Just YouTube it the next day and do the highlights reel of it, and you just catch it all in like 10 minutes. That works a lot better. Let's just kind of get into it. They sure talked a lot, and this time there were – is it 11? Because last time it was 10. I believe there was 11 on the stage. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whoa. Because they didn't have enough last time. And there was a big-ass airplane with Ronald Reagan's name on it, just to widen the scope of things.
Right.
We talk enough, Rachel. Rachel, go ahead and give us your opinion overall, your general impression of the debate. Did it make you nauseous as well?
It did. My general impression was that kind of a whole lot of nothing was said, particularly by Trump, of course. Every time he opens his mouth, I get more confused after he closes it than I was before. He says a lot of words, but they don't mean a lot. I think everyone was excited. Let's rephrase that. Republicans were excited by Carly Fiorina, or however you pronounce her last name, because, you know, she has lady parts and she was talking with the boys.
Allegedly.
I mean, who knows, right?
It's fine with me.
Her sort of response to Trump, I thought, was fine. Everyone else just seemed like, you know, a bunch of white dudes talking about not much.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting point. And I think that a lot of people are going to – a lot of the punditry is associating Fiorina's good marks on the debate and her rise with standing up to Trump. And I don't think that had anything to do with it. I think it had to do with the fact that she prattled off a lot of bullshit that didn't make sense, but she sounded like she was offering true facts and knew what she was talking about. Mm-hmm. And she got very huffy about the non-existent abortion snuff film that mm-hmm. was supposedly on those doctor tapes, which isn't on it at all. And that's why she's climbing in the polls a little bit. It has nothing to do with telling off Trump for – you know, calling her ugly or whatever that – I don't even remember what the hell that was about.
And I also think Republicans feel like because she's a woman, they'll get women to vote for her.
Right.
So that's why she's sort of the flavor of the week. Right,
right. It's that old game. Like Marco Rubio, you really got to get in there. You have a Hispanic last name. So, you know,
yeah.
Ben Carson, you're black. So, you know, black people are going to vote for you. It's like, no, you know, these folks aren't really that
– one-dimensional.
No.
Yes.
No, not at all.
As a person who is a lady, I can tell you,
yeah,
I would rather vote for anyone on our side than a woman on theirs.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So, like, the Alan Keyes and Sarah Palin presidential prospects aren't doing
– Herman Cain.
Yeah, Herman Cain is, oh, wow. is not doing so well anymore.
Blast from the past there. Yeah. No, I totally agree. That was the only thing that made this somewhat vaguely interesting for non-Republicans was the introduction of a woman, Fiorina. But, yeah, aside from the supposed fireworks between her and Trump, I mean – Yeah, she's to me just as robotic as Scott Walker and just as rehearsed.
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, she did. I'll give her this. Now, what she said was absolute nonsense, and it doesn't hold up to any scrutiny. But she said it with passion and conviction.
Yes.
So, and that is why she's garnering some attention now. Long term, I don't think she's a viable candidate. I don't think there's much there. But
you're never going to get the good old boys to vote for her. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, that's hard right. for me to imagine.
Yeah, no
really.
Way.
I mean, besides, they have their whole horrible misogynistic script ready for Hillary Clinton, and they'll have to bury that if it's Fiorina mm-hmm. versus Clinton. Yeah.
Yep.
I just don't see that.
But don't you think her passion and vigor that she speaks with? I don't know. To me, that comes off as rehearsed. I don't believe it could be rehearsed. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, she's given the token lines. You know, she's. I mean, they all piled on to the abortion thing, the videos, and you know, I don't
right,
find her passion any more believable because she is a woman. You know, I think that it's easy to kind of buy into her line more. I think maybe, you know, some of those things she'll get a pass, but I don't buy her as a believable in any way, and. I don't think she really helped herself that much just in general because that exchange with Trump is just very, very, I don't know. It was a little too obvious because he's been misogynistic. They've brought it up the very beginning of the last debate. So you kind of saw it coming. And I don't think she really scored herself many points just by saying, you know, I don't like you being misogynistic or whatever she said. I don't remember what she said.
Well, no. Her good marks after the debate and her rise in the polls are recent. Few days has nothing to do with the Trump exchange. Nothing. It was all the other stuff, mm-hmm. Which has no substance to it, but it has style.
It sounded like she was talking about something that makes sense.
Right.
When you mm-hmm. dig into it, none of those things are true or make sense, but it sounded in the moment, if you didn't know, like, oh my gosh, she has a plan. She's actually saying things.
Right, right. Like she's going to expand the Sixth Fleet, and the Sixth Fleet is just sort of like an organization of leadership, so it doesn't really make sense. She's going to send a few more thousand troops to Germany, which there's already 46,000 troops there, so I don't know what that means, how that's relevant to anything. And
you don't look into it. It sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds good, which the average American won't. They'll just be like, oh wow, shit, that lady's smart. I you know.
Well, so yeah, I mean, to that point, I mean, we are talking about the same people where 40 or 42 or whatever it is percent are going with Trump right now, so you know, you can only give so much right. credit for the beliefs they have. But no,
even more shockingly, they did some search engine analytics on Jeb Bush, and like one of the leading questions was, is that Jeb Bush guy related to George Bush?
No.
Yeah.
Seriously.
No. Yeah. But that goes to show that the average American just doesn't pay attention. They're not interested in politics. Mm-hmm. The ones who are going to vote are probably going to tune in a couple weeks before the election and mm-hmm. see which candidate tickles their fancy based more on style than substance. And the hardcore politicos already know pretty much who they're going to vote for, at least which party they're going to vote for. I think there's much less wiggle room for in the people who are paying attention now to, you know, they're going to actually go – to a different party, Democrat or Republican.
Yeah, no.
No, a few.
Really?
A few. Well, that are paying attention now than are really heavily politically invested. A few, not many. But there's a bunch out there who they don't have party affiliation. They show up and vote for whoever, and they pay attention, you know, a month or two at the most before the election. They're not even paying attention to any of this crap now. And then the name right. Jeb Bush pops up like, Bush, I remember that name. I wonder if – and it's like to us, of course – you know, we know, you know, it's not news to us, but to your average American who doesn't pay any attention to politics, that doesn't surprise me that much.
Yeah,
great. Well, I also think it's interesting that Republicans right now that I talk to, my dad in particular, don't really like any of the candidates. They don't have a favorite. I haven't talked to anybody who's passionate about any of them. Right now, he likes Carly Fiorina for whatever reason.
Flavor of the week.
Yeah, flavor of the week. But nobody's excited about any of these people.
Yeah, and people are excited about Trump because he's putting on a hell of a show and he's entertaining. And otherwise, if it was just like Bush and Rubio and whoever, nobody would be watching these debates. And now people are because Trump's going to say something from The Apprentice, basically.
So the whole deep bench philosophy they have, like, oh, we have too many good candidates, not just one. That's not holding over with the Republicans.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because no, but it's funny you bring that up because we'll get to this later. But in Scott Walker's I quit speech today, he kind of said like, you know, there's too many candidates. We need to whittle it down so some more people should quit, like I just did.
Yeah, and I would have won if it wasn't for the other 12. Okay,
it's like what happened to the deep bench philosophy? I've got a ton to say about Trump, so I'll wait.
You're only allowed to say it if it's in his voice, the Trump impersonation voice. So that's the
what
rule.
Impersonation? Are you talking about our actual live broadcast? Since you segued, I guess I'll get into it now. A couple weeks ago, we did a mock Trump press conference that was going to be a quote policy speech. And the joke was there was no policy in it. That was the whole crux of the joke. He just spit out like, you know, Apprentice one-liners and whatever. And then a week ago, he had a fundraiser on a battleship where I guess he was playing Admiral Trump for a fake PAC that isn't legally allowed to be in California or something. And it was billed as a policy speech. His people said, you know, tune into this Trump policy speech. And just like our press conference, our fake press conference, there was no policy in it. Mm-hmm. So it almost makes me think, like, did Trump, like, Google and come across our thing real quick? And he was like, okay, what do I do? I have a policy speech. And then he heard our thing, and then he was, oh, okay, that's what I'll do. I'll just –
can I get away with that? Let's try it.
He's getting away with it so far.
What if I can get away with it? Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Right, and there's a shelf life on that, but I'll get to that.
Wow. It kind of the same as the debate because it was pretty conspicuous. We live tweeted this debate, which made it a lot more tolerable for me at least.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. I did until my head hurt so bad that I couldn't do it anymore. But yeah.
Well, I was wondering. I thought you just kind of couldn't take it anymore, and you just went to bed, and you're like, you know, fuck this, I can't take it anymore. Well, I guess kind of what happened, but couldn't take it. But yeah, it was very noticeable across Twitter how. After those first few questions, the second half, when it actually got to a little more substance, that he was very quiet, very noticeably quiet, and gave his standard answers of, though I know very good people, I'm going to get the best people.
We're going to do something great.
On. Yeah.
It's going to be wonderful.
It'll be fabulous.
I love eventually I will know the things I need to know. You know, my second day in office, I'm going to be for sure ready. Just right now, I have no idea. Like, that's, you know.
That's how it works on the show, so why not? He can always learn
totally,
on the
why
job.
Not, right? Yeah, exactly.
So, it'll get old pretty quick. We have our running bet. Actually, let's ask Rachel. I gave it till about Thanksgiving. I think Trump's just going to get bored and just quit. And once his numbers dip below, you know, 30% or something. What did you say, Travis? You said like Christmas time, maybe New Year's before.
I don't know. I said around New Year's, and I'm not sure now because it becomes more and more prescient with each passing day that not only is he weak on any policy, he's got nothing. He's got absolutely nothing. He makes Sarah Palin look prepared and. Intelligent on policy matters. So eventually Republicans are just going to be like, no, we can't, you know, no, we can't. It's not going to happen. I don't know how long it's going to last because right now he's just tapped into their being pissed off with the party and their xenophobia and whatever, and that can carry you for a while, at least a few more months.
Yeah, I agree. I I really thought he was doing this as a publicity stunt to sort of promote Miss America or The Apprentice or whatever ridiculous things he's doing, but I think his ego got the better of him, and he's enjoying it. He's enjoying the limelight. He's enjoying the attention. He gets to be all over TV. I think it's surprising to him and everyone else that he has such a support base right now. I mean, I think we all know that those people are the fringy of the fringe, but those are the people who vote in the Republican primaries. So that's where he's getting his support. For me, I don't think he has long-term possibility of becoming the nominee. I think Republicans realize that if they elect him as their nominee, my niece could beat him. Like, there's no one on our side that couldn't beat Trump. So they're going to have to get realistic, and he's going to have to drop out. I would say it's only going to be when people start paying attention. So I'd say after the new year. I think after the holidays are over and people start getting serious about Super Tuesday and the primaries start is when people are going to go, okay, enough. But yeah, that's my sort of out limit.
Well, I'll say that's what kind of thought, because only reason I'd rethink my answer, I thought maybe it actually has to get to 2016 before people say, oh, okay, now it's actually election year. You know, let's get serious. So you might be right. I might have to move my target a little bit. But I don't know. Just the way he is, like, I totally agree with what you said. He's doing it for the attention. He's doing it for the publicity. I really don't think he even wants the actual job, because then he would have to actually figure out how to, you know, come up with policies. And
yeah, every single day. Every single day.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's a lot of pressure and a lot of work. No.
Yeah.
You know, you got to really have a certain mentality for that, and I don't see the Trumpmeister.
No. Yeah,
it's not like being president is like being CEO. It's not like you have, you know, an assistant who tells you how to tie your shoes. Like, you actually have to make decisions. He can be whatever kind of CEO he wants to be and hire great people around him, but ultimately, president's way too much.
And he can be like W and Hyde in Camp David for half the time, but even the other half, he's going to have to, you know, do a lot of work. Now, unless he has like a Cheney as his running mate, who's happy to run the country in his stead.
Policy wonk. Yeah. He'd have to.
Well, I wasn't thinking policy wonk as much as Darth Vader, but
who even is that on the Republican side right now?
The Darth Cheney? I don't know. Yeah.
Or, you know, somebody who knows
Wolfowitz?
Anything.
I don't know.
Oh God, no.
Wow.
Well, I mean, that was basically Dick Cheney before he was VP. He was this foreign policy guy.
Mm-hmm.
Who really – well, see, actually Dick Cheney, before he was like this dark emperor, was more of a yes man. I mean Dick Cheney made the same passionate arguments he's making now for that we should have never left Iraq, for leaving Saddam in power, because his old boss was George H.W. Bush, who took a lot of flack for stopping the first Gulf War and not removing Saddam. And then the Cheneys and the Colin Powells of the world said, oh, no, that would have been a really bad idea, guys. And so, and now the tables are turned, and he's trying to protect the legacy of his vice presidency. And he's like, oh, we should have never left.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
You know, we should go back in, bomb everybody. So,
I love the more he says that on TV, and the more the Republican nominees have to either go on one or the other side of that. People are so sick of the war that.
Sick of Cheney and the whole thing
that I love that he's on the news junket right now saying, oh no, it was a great idea, and now Jeb is being asked the question, and it's wonderful. I love it. Keep it up.
Yeah. I don't know how long that's going to last. In fact, I think that whole Cheney thing kind of lasted a weekend.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. You know, and then he's back into hiding, but yeah, well, he's the gift that keeps on giving.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Back to the whole thing about back to the deadline issue for Trump. You know, already they're saying after this debate, you know, Fiorina supposedly is rising and he's starting to slow down, and you know, they're trying to say that he's peaked. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah,
of course,
and that might be right. And if he has peaked around 25 or 30%, that means there's 70% that's ready to go somewhere else.
Yep.
And you know, the first domino dropped today, Scott Walker, even though in the latest polling he wasn't even hitting 1%. Mm. And then there's a bunch of people that – why the hell are they – why is Santorum and Jim Gilmore and Lindsey Graham and Chris Christie still running technically? I mean,
does anyone know what happened to Jim Gilmore, why he wasn't in any of the debates?
Because CNN said you had to meet a certain threshold, and he didn't even get that.
Close to 1% or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, okay. We have to know your name before you can actually be on the stage.
It could be that Jim Gilmore, you know, announced he was suspending his campaign weeks ago and just nobody paid attention.
Jim Gilmore?
Right.
Good point. What about Ben Carson? Because supposedly, until this Fiorina thing, I don't know if he's still supposedly a second. He apparently took too much Valium before he showed up for this debate. But
seriously,
I don't know.
He's definitely on drugs. I swear to God.
After Donald Trump, he is the worst potential GOP candidate I have ever seen, and I'm not even talking about his crazy right wing fanatic policies. I just mean as a guy that's got nothing as far as coherent thoughts on policy. He does sound like he's sedated. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine this guy on a debate stage with Hillary Clinton?
I'd love it. Let's do it.
No.
I mean, I would be embarrassed. I'd literally feel bad for him. I would be like, you know. And when Apollo Creed was getting beaten to death by Ivan Drago, you know, it's like, throw the damn towel!
He commits
he
dies.
That's the guy right now, after the number one guy that we know is going to crash and burn. So, yeah, man, that deep bench is it kicking some butt right now. And then their next best option is George W. Bush's little brother. So it's like, if you're a Republican, and I know that they're feigning excitement, but I mean, wow, what? Really, you got Trump, Carson, Fiorina, then Bush, and who is your white knight that you're waiting to?
Maybe Rubio, maybe.
But I'll give you a million and one reasons why he is a terrible, terrible candidate. He's got virtually no impressive record in the Senate to show for anything. He's really young. I mean, they said Obama was young and inexperienced, but Obama knew how to work a room and work a microphone.
To his own admission in the first debate, he's like, we can't be talking about experience because if we talk about experience, Hillary Clinton is the best candidate. And I was like, out of his mouth, I couldn't agree more. Correct.
Right, right. And that's the thing. And that's what the Republicans have been touting for so long because, you know, Clinton was kind of young. Bill Clinton was young and Obama was obviously really young. And it's like, and now we're going to go the other way. Well, sort of maybe that whole outsider thing. But, you know, Rubio's no outsider. He's in the Senate. And so, no, I mean, their best hope is almost like Romney getting back in. I mean, seriously. If you put your God's honest Republican strategist hat on right now and imagine a debate stage going head to head with Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders for that matter, and who would you want in the ring in there? Sleepy Ben Carson, Trump, Fiorina.
I got nothing. No, to me, I would have to say Bush just because of the name recognition, and he at least has some experience, and that's it.
Are we seriously talking about Bush v. Clinton? I think people are going to lose their minds if that's their option.
They might lose their minds, but then look at the last Bush v. Clinton results, and you're probably going to get about the same results.
Yeah. Low turnout.
Low turnout,
but an ass kicking.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, I think there's going to be low turnout regardless, especially because there is nobody to get, you know, fired up about. You know, our hope, that the people come out in droves to vote for Bernie. That's what we're hoping for.
If it is Clinton, there will be more excitement than people think. There will be a lot of excitement among women voters. There will be a lot of excitement among African-American voters. She's still doing really, really strongly with them. And, you know, the millennial crowd that's all for Bernie, they will reluctantly come around, you know, when they pay attention to what's at stake and the two sides lay out their platforms. They won't be as excited if it's not Bernie, but there'll be more fire around a Clinton candidacy than people give her credit for.
I agree. And technically, I'm a millennial, if you forget. But I agree. I think
– Not really. Not
I mean,
really
I know, like I'm cusping on Gen X. Anyway, no, I agree. I completely agree with that. That people are kind of tired right now, but once it's like, well, okay, Hillary or whoever they pick, the choice is obvious and they'll vote.
Well, you know, this whole legacy thing that people frown upon, yeah, that's inside the beltway. But as for the American people, you know, they have fond memories of the Clinton name.
Yes.
They don't have fond memories of the Bush name. So, you know, when you talk about, oh, geez, these political dynasties, it's like, well, you get really skeezed out when you're thinking of another Bush. When you're thinking of another Clinton, yeah, maybe that's, you know, you'd rather have a fresh face in there, but you can live with that.
Yes.
I think would be the general consensus among Democratic voters. They're not going to stay home in droves, or they're definitely not going to turncoat and vote for a Marco Rubio or whoever.
No.
I mean, and that's the problem the Republicans have here. And there's another angle too, then I'll get to a little bit with the whole if the Bernie Hillary thing actually does turn into a real fight, and I'm not yet convinced it will. And I'm a Bernie supporter. I'll tell you, know, I'm going to caucus for him. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to work. But, you know, I still, to be honest right now, I still think Hillary's the lead dog. But, you know, you better be careful what you wish for on the other side if you think you're doing enough damage to Hillary Clinton that Bernie Sanders is the actual candidate. Because right now, they think that, okay, if it's Clinton or Sanders, you know, we have a much better chance against Sanders, is, you know, this socialist. But, you know, Hillary Clinton, sure, they would want to beat her, but they would live to fight another day because Hillary still basically supports the old, you know, banking power system. And Bernie is their worst nightmare. It's like Elizabeth Warren.
Right. Well, and funny you brought that name up, because don't you think a Sanders-Warren ticket, you know, that would get that female vote also. Don't you think that if Bernie does get the nomination, and right now, the last polls I saw, they actually have him leading in Iowa and New Hampshire. So don't you think that would say it would speak to the turnout and the fact that people are getting excited about his campaign? And it's not just the standard, we're voting for Hillary because we're Democrats and she's the nominee. You know, that means that turnout is going to be high enough that he could beat any Republican that, you know, whoever comes out of the other side, especially in the year where they're not excited, you know, like Rachel already mentioned, that people, there's nobody that they're really fired up about, because this whole Trump thing, you know, it's going to blow over. So I don't know. To me,
I think it's a good sign if he gets it. Well, I think it Bernie would have a very good shot. I'm just saying from their perspective, they think that anybody but Hillary is their best shot.
I don't agree with that.
In terms of – well, that, I'm just saying that's from their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even saying I agree with it 100%. But in terms of Iowa and New Hampshire, you know, once you get to South Carolina and then into Super Tuesday, there's just – you know, there's not much going on right there with Bernie. And Bernie acknowledges that himself. He's got a lot of work to do to get it going past those two states. You know, that's just the start of it. And the Beltway, you know, whips everybody into a frenzy about that. So what? I mean, Michelle Bachmann won the last Iowa straw poll. And then I think it was – and then who won New Hampshire? I don't even think it was Romney that won New Hampshire. So
– see, I'm going to tend to disagree about Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. I think that if he wins the nomination, we may be in a little bit of trouble. I'm going to caucus for him anyway because I love that man. But – I think the swing voter is who I worry about. And I have some of them in my life, and they really don't care. They're not paying any attention. If you said Ben Carson, they would think they would have no idea who I was talking about, right? But when it really gets down to him being unabashedly, yeah, I'm a socialist, and yeah, redistribution of wealth. And that whole thing, I think, for your swing voter who pays no attention, you know, that's a scary word and it's a scary notion. And I think they might go, it's too different from what I already know. It's too different. And so maybe I go with the other guy. I don't know that that's true, but I worry.
So you think he's too anti-establishment and they'll go with a name. And that's kind of why from the beginning, I thought it's going to be Bush v. Clinton, because that's, like you said, the average person, they barely know who Jeb Bush is, you know, compared to George Bush. So, you know, they're just going to go with what they know. You know, Trump, people know. That's the only reason he's even getting, you know, any support right now. He's a name, you know. So I agree on that point, because sadly the average American, you know, is not very educated or actually just apathetic, you know, to the whole process. So they're going to go with, you know, the known factor. It's going to take that grassroots campaigning, you know, that Bernie's trying to whip up right now. But that's kind of how Obama started. The same thing. He was not a name whatsoever. You know, that great campaign manager. They did a great job. getting the turnout, and that's what it's going to take. It's going to take people who aren't necessarily following the process to come out and show support. Will it happen? Yeah. Who knows? But you know that.
Part of that was that Hillary's campaign was kind of asleep at the switch, and mm-hmm. Obama caught them off guard. Hillary was kind of running as the incumbent and thinking longer term, and she learned her lesson from that. And I think her ground game is much better entrenched than it was. So I think it's going to be much harder for Bernie this time to do an Obama-style campaign and catch her off guard, you know, racking up delegates in Montana and South Dakota and all these places she just didn't even think about in 2008. So it's going to be tougher for him in that respect. And definitely, you know, when you talk about the establishment, you know, this is why these are the people that are pushing Biden to get in the race. It's not a bunch of millennials banging down Biden's door. It's people that are like, oh, geez, I'm worried about this email thing. Maybe, you know, Joe, we might need you, buddy. Mm-hmm. Get warmed up in the bullpen, which I'm still not convinced is going to happen. And in fact, I would put my money on Biden not entering the race.
Me too.
But, you know, those are the people that are that want him to enter because they're thinking, you know, Bernie, no, you know, that's not good for a general election. And Obama or Biden, yeah, you know, we can win with that because it's a known quantity, like you guys said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you know, when it comes down to it, it's usually style that wins over substance. People go for charisma, relatability. You know, Barack has the charisma, you know, in oodles of it, and he's very relatable. He can come off as a regular guy. He's also obviously very intelligent. You know, I think people saw that and they don't see it in Hillary, and that's why she's getting passed by someone like Bernie, who is, you know, the everyman, and he's relating to the middle class, and he's down there in the streets. And,
I disagree. I think Bernie's appeal, and this is a positive, and this is why people like Rachel and I are excited. It's all in his message.
Yeah.
Because Bernie comes across as a combination between like Doc Brown and an escaped mental patient.
Then tell me, future boy. Who's president of the United States in 1985?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan, the actor?
He's this wild-haired old guy, old white guy who comes across like your crazy professor, you know, that wears horrible colored sweaters and rants about stuff. But his message is on point, and that's what's getting people excited. He's not the cool dude that you want to shoot hoops with like Obama. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, Hillary, I think, can feign that okay. Biden is very good at doing that, and so really with Bernie, it's all about the message. It's not that there's a bunch of people out there that are like, "Wow, you know, I want to have this guy over for a beer."
Yep.
It's like when they stop and listen to what he has to say, they're actually moved by it, which is why he got a much better response at, of all places, at Liberty University than Ted Cruz did.
Yep. I totally agree with that. I think Barack Obama got young people excited because he was young and he was new and he was a person of color and he's a rock star. He's a charismatic guy, but
And he had
agree.
A good message too.
And he had a good message too. He did. And we were so tired of Bush. Bernie is, I think the only ray of hope that I have is that we can all look at everything he's saying and his message and go, I agree with all of that. And then when they throw the socialism word around, you go, right, that's what that means. I don't have great hope for that considering what happened with Obamacare. You know, you pull people, do you like Obamacare? No. Here are all the things that are in Obamacare. Oh, I like all those things. Do you like Obamacare now? No. Okay. Well, so I don't have
hope. Do you like the Federal Affordable Health Care Act? What is that? All those things I just told you. Oh, yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I like it. Obamacare? No, I hate that. So I don't have great hope that that'll happen, but I do think people are excited about the message.
No, that's true. It takes both. Obviously, you have to have the message too. But I think that might be Hillary's downfall. She doesn't have that relatability, you know, because she's just way too scripted, way too stiff. She's too much of a politician, and obviously, that's not what's winning these days, as evidenced by the rise of D's nuts.
But you're still sort of looking at it. I mean, look, this whole process so far has been dominated by the GOP clown show. You know, they're barely even talking about it. They're talking some about the stupid email server thing, which is going to go away at some point because there's just nothing there. and they're talking a little bit about Bernie here and there, but then everything else is Trump and the sideshow. So yeah, they're really fired up about these outsiders on that side, because with assholes like McConnell and Cruz and Boehner promising that they're going to repeal Obamacare and repeal this and repeal that and repeal gay marriage, and then it never happens because they can't actually do it. They're all pissed off. So I'm sick of hearing these politicians, and someone like Trump comes up there and says, you know, kick out all the Muslims and the Mexicans are all rapists, and everybody cheers. I don't think it works that way on the Democratic side necessarily. To some degree it does, true. And I think Hillary's a little better at doing the folksy, you know, get to know you stuff than you think. She actually does pretty well with that on the ground. And that's why whenever they ask Democratic voters, you know, are you worried about the email server thing? They're like, no, it's a joke. Now, the general public at large that's not really paying attention, like, yeah, that's on their radar just because it's been bouncing around the airwaves so much. So, six of one, half a dozen of the other. I mean, I think that Bernie is going to have to hone his message to a broader audience in some ways. He fumbled the whole Black Lives Matter thing a little bit. I think he's getting back on track with that a little better. But, you know, African-American voters trust the Clinton brand. There are some issues. You know, Bill Clinton did introduce the crime bill, and that went a long way towards incarcerating a lot more African-Americans and drug crimes and everything else. But on the whole –
Welfare reform.
Yep. But on the whole, you know, African-Americans, they trust the Clinton name and the Clinton brand. The Sanders guy, they don't know anything about him. They know he's this old white dude from Vermont. So it's going to take him – it's going to be harder for him to kind of, you know, get his name and the trust across like that.
And I think for African-American voters, it's not enough to just talk about economics. Of course, that affects them too. But I think he needs to specifically address the racial crisis in this country in a way that's meaningful and substantial to them. That's not just about, no, look, you're going to be benefited by all of these policies too, all of these sort of economic policies. He needs to really specifically address the racial crisis. And if he doesn't do that, he's got no chance.
And he can't rely on his record. That's what he tried to do with the whole Black Lives Matter thing. He was kind of like, don't you know who I am? I've been fighting for civil rights for years. It's like, yeah, that might be true. But, you know, young African-American folks in South Carolina that are worried about racial injustice, they don't know who the hell you are and what your Senate record is. Mm-hmm. And they don't care. Mm-hmm. You have got to explain. You've got to reach out and explain and relate to them, you know, in very much more directly. And I think he's figuring that out. But he got off to a rocky start.
Well, you know, obviously this is where the experience of going through this process is going to help Hillary. You know, there's still time, obviously, and we'll see how it plays out with Bernie, whether he continues to rise or, like you said, if the name recognition wins out. You know, but the message is there. And so far, you know, the turnout is showing that there's some support behind it. So my last question about that is, I'm curious because we've talked again that the standard line is, okay, well, women are going to go out and vote for Hillary. And that's also supposedly behind why, you know, Fiorina is rising, because, oh, she's a woman, we need someone to vote for, you know, a Republican, because, of course, Republicans aren't very good with women. So do you think because, Rachel, you said you're supporting Bernie right now. Do you think that the female vote really is Hillary's to lose, or are women, are we not giving them enough credit, realize they'll actually go for a message over just, you know, blind line of, oh, female, we have to support the female?
Sure. So I think absolutely there's not just one female voter. We're a pretty diverse group. But I think I think people don't give women, or any minority group really in general, enough credit and enough diversity. So I think it matters to me less that she's a woman than the message. Obviously, I'd love to see a woman as president. I'm a super feminist, but I think that whoever can do more for women's issues is who needs to be elected in terms of when women vote. So we're not voting because we want to see a woman president. We're voting because we want to see women's issues specifically addressed and women's rights specifically supported. And I think both of the candidates have that on lockdown. But also, I care about a lot of other issues, too. So like economic issues, that's where Bernie Sanders appeals to me. So I support him. Of course, if she wins the nomination, I will gleefully vote for her.
Yeah, let me add that there's also a generational thing at play here and a sort of cultural thing. If you go back to 2008, you had an interesting confluence of events in several weeks, right? Hillary dropped out, and you had a lot of very pissed off Hillary supporters that vented their anger at first at Obama. They didn't find it fair or what have you. And then all of a sudden, Sarah Palin jumps in out of nowhere, and people got excited for a week because they didn't know anything about her. A lot of women didn't know anything about her. And then as soon as they figured out what she was all about, well, that was it. It was over. You know, then the hope that all these, as they called them, the Pumas, were going to jump ship and support McCain Palin evaporated when Palin had the same old, you know, misogynistic anti-woman, anti-choice crap that everybody else had.
Exactly.
Now with Hillary, it's a little different. And her – let's think about voting women who vote. Yes, we would all love to see the 18 to, you know, 35-year-old, 40-year-old women vote in large numbers, but those age groups still don't vote in large numbers. The ones that do are the older generation. You're talking about the ones entering the baby boomer age and a little bit older, and they are from a generation joined with Hillary where it was really, really hard to break the glass ceiling. And Hillary represents to them personally because they were there at the same time and they saw her as the first lady and they saw her get treated horribly, you know, as a woman and all the insults and all the crap that she went through. And they're pretty strongly united behind her, you know, getting down to brass tacks and maybe splitting hairs and saying, okay, well, this candidate probably has a better overall record for women's rights. And it's going to be really hard to move that very strong block of support of women from Hillary Clinton for a lot of reasons that just go beyond the policy stuff. You know, she very much represents to them a time when, you know, and they still call her these names. When Hillary Clinton emerged as a first lady who actually wanted to do a lot of stuff and not just, you know, the typical sort of charity here and that and say no to drugs. I mean, she was really involved in policy and the driving force behind what would have been healthcare reform back in 1993. You know, they called her the names. She's ambitious. She's mm-hmm. this. She's that.
Cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. For just trying to do what any male politician would do. And that resonates with them and that sticks with them. And now that she's actually running for president, boy, it's going to be hard to convince a large number of these women to vote for anybody else.
What I think is really interesting about some women that I know that I've talked to in that older generation is the affair, her staying, is a sticking point for a lot of them. That she shouldn't have stayed, that it showed weakness or that it was more of a political move than it was about love. And I still sometimes hear women say like, yeah, but she stayed with Bill after all that. And to me, that's shocking and stupid, but yeah. It is something that I hear.
The reality of that is something that those people couldn't handle. And you and I
completely
know.
Agree.
Yes.
Yes.
Well,
that's the topic for another time.
Yeah.
And again, what does that have to do with, you know, how she would govern? You know, nothing. Exactly. It speaks to a personal character. But again, this is the things that people, when it comes down to it, people value. Like I said, you know, your personality, personal traits. You know, the famous thing with Kennedy and Nixon, you know, the debate, because Nixon was sweating on the stage and he looked uncomfortable on TV, you know? For that, I guess Marco Rubio.
Like,
he should be kicked off immediately.
Right. So they thought, you know, is he hiding something? Why is he so nervous? This guy gives me the creeps.
Yeah.
Like, he had the flu.
Right. And I think Bob Dole was blinking too much during a debate.
And Al Gore was seemed impatient with the sighing and the
right.
Yeah. So, but this stuff matters. For people who are not paying close attention to policy. This stuff matters, and that's a good chunk of the American voting population.
Yeah.
I'd say a solid 30-40% maybe of people who actually vote are going to pay no attention at all until, you know, a month or two before the election.
Yes.
Absolutely. And what they hear are the sound bites, you know. Out of 3 hours of the debate, we forced ourselves to watch until you got nauseous and sick. You know, they'll catch 5 seconds of it. You know, each candidate with what they said. You know, they'll get the exchange when Trump tried to tell Carly Fiorina she was a beautiful woman, and she kind of, you know, rolls her eyes, whatever. That's all they know about it. So that's who's representing the majority of the voters here, eligible voters, whether they vote or not.
I think I said out loud when he said that, "Oh my God!" but then you realize, you know, Republicans didn't say that. They're like, "No, that's
what? Yeah. That's a compliment." Yeah. Oh my God!
He's come such a long way.
Tear my own hair out.
Oh man! All right, let's take a little break here, and then we'll get back to some more juicy debate talk. Stick around.
Sounds good.
Back. We are having a vigorous discourse here with our new co-host Rachel Hutchison, and she's up the level of the game. Well, she's.
Well, Pierre just gave you a promotion. You're no longer a guest. You're now a co-host. So
thanks, Pierre.
Keep your Monday evenings free, I guess.
I think she's holding her own. I think I'll just hand over the job to you. You can do the hosting, and then I can watch Monday Night Football here, actually, because you're up more in your politics.
Now I see your angle. He's always got an angle.
Okay. Yeah. No. All right. So we're going to talk about Scott Walker for about 28 seconds, and then we're going to forget that he ever existed. He just, what, a few hours ago?
He dropped out of the race, and he's a doofus, and so long, we'll miss you.
That's
no, he wasn't the second guy I predicted. I think a couple weeks ago I said by the next time we talk, I think maybe two or three will have dropped out. I knew Rick Perry was going to be one. But I didn't think Walker was going to tank so hard so fast, and he did, and he ran out of money. At least he ran out of money in his direct campaign. He's got a bunch of money in his super PAC, which might lead people to sort of question the whole super PAC thing. Like, they love that because they can get all the dark money and unnamed money, but then you can't spend it or use it quite the same. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily help you if you're in a crisis like Walker is, and so that's it. And Walker's out.
Yeah, and, well, it's funny. It didn't seem not too long ago, you know, before this whole thing started, he was proclaimed to be one of the front runners. You know, when you list your top three or four, of course,
he was leading He was leading in Iowa for a long time, several months.
And of course, this is before anybody knew anything about Trump actually being a serious candidate, or, you know, but yeah, I mean, when you said the first three names come to mind, it was Bush, Rubio, Walker, you know, and so, yeah, a little surprising that he was one of the first ones to go, but, well, not when you look at the numbers now. I mean, he didn't do anything to help.
Oh, he was a terrible candidate. Yeah. That being said, he was still among the best of this field for the Republicans. You know, at least he was a governor. He did have on his resume that he had won two terms, and he had beaten a vigorous recall campaign. He had taken on the unions and won. These aren't good. I'm not extolling the virtues of this. These are horrible, horrible things. But to Republicans, they were good selling points for a presidential candidate. But it wasn't enough, and I think he can thank, in no small part, Mr. Donald Trump, who just sucked all the air out of the room for him and many other candidates. And that's going to be the lasting Trump legacy, not that he's going to win this thing, but that he deep-sixed so many campaigns along the way. Scott Walker's just the first.
And for the candidates that he does do that to, those are the people that were the most scared of, at least for me. Like Scott Walker, I was like, well, you know, he has sort of that milquetoast, boring, bland white guy appeal.
Folksy Midwest charm.
And people are sort of more and more against unions, and he does have at least some background of politics. So I was delighted to see that he was kicked out, but I was also really surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and that's pretty much all there is to him. I mean, he He did nothing basically positive the last several months to get anybody on his side, you know, donors.
No, he had awful sound bites. He had awful answers to questions. He was – I didn't think he did terrible in the debates, but he didn't do anything to distinguish himself in the debates, which he desperately needed to do. And he makes Tim Pawlenty, who was an awful candidate in his own right, look like a great candidate.
Yeah. So exciting.
Yeah, right? No, he was just – he was an awful, awful presidential candidate when it came down to it. But let's not forget, a couple months ago he was being touted, rightly so, as one of the strongest candidates in this GOP field. And he's gone. He's toast.
Yep. Well, good riddance. Yeah, I remember tweeting at one point during the debate. It looked like he was just raising his hand to try to remind Jake Tapper that he was still there. Just like, yeah, I'm the guy in the middle. So, yeah.
And he had the one-liner about, we don't need an apprentice in the White House, which I think got groans from the audience. And
yeah. All right, so in the news lately, we kind of touched upon it earlier, the whole xenophobia story continues. Of course, Trump leading the charge here, but let's kind of break down how that happened. It was a press conference, correct? And he was asked by
I think it was a New Hampshire town hall. Yeah.
Town hall, I'm sorry. Town hall, yeah, because it was some, you know, like a typical Republican voter, right, who's asking him a question. So we all know that the president is a Muslim and not an American. And then Trump's response to that was what?
Well, no, I think the first thing the guy said was, we know that the Muslims have these terrorist training camps everywhere, and we know our president is probably one of them and not even an American or something like that. And Trump was like, yep, this is a good question. Yep, before the guy was even finished. And now he's being called to task for that and not affecting his standing certainly in the GOP polls.
No, well, why would it? I mean, it's not like this is something we didn't know about him, so –
Well, right, and the Beltway press tends to forget or pretend they forgot that the reason Trump got his name on, you know, sort of in the whole political realm in 2012 was his whole Obama is a secret Muslim and has a fake birth certificate thing. Like, Trump was all over that.
He did.
And even, you know, in my old the RNC that we want to see, I had a fake Trump announcement. Thing because that was his big thing then, and he had the stupid video that he launched like a few weeks before the election that he said was going to be a big bombshell and change the election, and it was something about a rumor that the Obamas once thought about getting a divorce or something. It was just completely ridiculous. Yeah. And now nobody wants to ask him and remember that. But guess what? Those Republican voters that like him, they remember, and they're bringing it up. And they want to hear him talk about it, and they're not going to let up, you know? And I don't think that Trump is going to do a McCain and take, you know, when some old lady in Dubuque is like, I'm afraid Obama's Muslim, you know, he's not going to grab the mic and be like, no, you know, please cut that shit out.
I can't trust Obama. I have read about him, and he's an Arab. He is not...
No, ma'am. He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with.
You know, Trump is just gonna, if anything, he's just gonna ignore it or inflame it.
Mm-hmm. Ben Carson didn't really distinguish himself there either, right? He's all on board with this, right? And he's running, well, depending on who you believe, either number two or number three. They say Fiorina now is on the rise, but Ben Carson has been number two lately in the polls, and yeah, the Muslim community is not real thrilled with him either. He's just reciting the same story, is he not?
Well, I mean, not just the Muslim community. I think a lot of people are kind of horrified because let's look at Ben Carson. Here's an African-American guy. 20 or 30 years ago, you know, nobody would have taken him seriously as a presidential candidate because of the color of his skin. And now this guy's got the audacity to get up there and say, well, you know, this person of the not right kind of faith, you know, he shouldn't be president. It just kind of it just makes you smack your head and say, do these people understand irony at all?
So he's like the Clarence Thomas of presidential candidates.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's a man of color talking about other minority groups not being allowed to have the same sort of access that he was once denied. 100 years ago, he couldn't vote.
Uh-huh.
Now he's a presidential candidate, but we shouldn't have Muslims because something about anti-constitution religion, something
that
would
doesn't jibe with the founders,
all.
Something.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, it defies logic, but yeah, in his mind, I guess it's rational, but yeah, we've talked about this. I can't understand personally, you know, coming from Miami and having basically the majority is the Hispanic community, you know, myself included, my family, you know, my dad's Cuban, and I can't understand the Cuban community that is Republican, and I know someone who is a huge Trump supporter. And I'm not talking older generation. I mean, same age, you know, Generation X, let's say. How can you support the xenophobia and the anti-immigration, you know, when your parents were immigrants? I don't get it.
Yeah. There's two answers to that. One part is there's still classism even among people who immigrated to this country.
Yes.
And so there's the upper, you know, banking class, and then the lower classes are kind of looked down on, and then you have a lot of the holdover everything. Fidel is horrible, and the Democrats are somehow soft on Fidel, and the Republicans are harder on Fidel. You know.
Well, and I have a person in my life whose parents immigrated here from Mexico, and she and her twin sister, their whole family really, are Republicans. Her twin sister, works for Immigrations and Customs Enforcement as an undercover officer, which is always shocking to me because they are immigrants. Mm-hmm. But to Travis's point exactly, her parents were land-owning people in Mexico. They come from the much higher echelon, higher class. And so for her, the issue is, well, we did it legally, so everyone else should be able to, ignoring the idea that, of course, it's expensive and time-consuming.
They could afford the best lawyers.
Yes.
They could afford to probably bribe whatever local,
yes,
politicians to get them to sign whatever papers they needed.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's that disconnect of, you know, the richer, the upper class types looking down on the people who snuck in, and, you know, how dare you do that? And you weren't brought over in the limo, so.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like you said, it comes down to class, right? The class issue, and, you know, as opposed to a straight up race issue, you know, I guess Ben Carson does not identify,
right,
you know, with his
minorities. Right. And when I see people of color, or, you know, Hispanics or whoever, who are, you know, Republicans, and they say, well, you know, the free market, the smaller government thing is really what's best for everybody, including, you know, people of color. And I'm like, okay, well, that's asinine and stupid, but I guess your heart's in the right place if you truly believe that, as opposed to what Ben Carson is doing, which is just straight up, you know, xenophobia.
Uh-huh.
Clarence Thomas voting against the Voting Rights Act.
Yeah.
Is sort of, yeah. Similarly baffling. Yeah.
Right. Speaking of baffling, I forgot to bring this up while we were doing our debate talk, but I have to get to this issue because I was kind of surprised to see it come up. How many of the candidates went just full out in declaring that vaccines give you autism, including Ben Carson?
Wow. See, by that point, my brain was raging, so I don't think I could have gotten sicker.
I wonder
but
why.
That was horrifying. To any sort of public health person out there, that was absolutely horrifying.
He's a surgeon, right? I mean, he has his PhD, Carson.
Supposedly.
PhD, he's a neurosurgeon.
Sorry, MD, right? Yeah. Neurosurgeon, like whatever, chair at Johns Hopkins.
Yeah, and what he said makes no sense at all, that, oh, vaccines are fine, but spread them out. There's no evidence that that means anything, or that bunching them up as they usually do is more dangerous. What spreading them out means is that you're more likely to forget or miss a dose and leave gaps in inoculation. So it was actually horrible public health. And it was a nod and a wink to the small but growing conservative anti-vaxxers, and there are liberal anti-vaxxers too. In fact, it started as sort of a liberal California thing, yep. But now like the Republicans have got on board with it, some of them, because it's like, oh well, government can't tell me what to do. It's like, you need to inoculate your child so they don't get measles and die. Well, you keep your government vaccines, you know, out of my family's business. So like, yeah, that's where we are now, and God knows where it'll stop.
Well, yeah, like you said, it started with the Hollywood crowd, wasn't it? Jenny McCarthy, who, of course, you should never.
Yeah, Rob Schneider, and RFK Jr. too. RFK Jr. does a lot of good stuff in terms of you know, climate change, but he was on that anti-vaxxer bandwagon too for some reason. And unfortunately, that gave it some credence, and Rolling Stone had to basically tear all those articles out and sort of denounce them, although he still writes for them. Yeah. So it did kind of start as a Hollywood, California left wing thing,
yep.
which you know, other liberals like me were horrified at and told them to shut the fuck up. And now the conservatives are getting in on the game too. And I wrote actually a blog piece about how that was even more dangerous, because when you're talking about superstition and rejecting science, like that's more of a conservative thing, and they can hop on that bandwagon. It can really be a movement, and you know, then watch out. And of course, from a public health perspective, if Jake Tapper wanted to ask a reasonable public health question, it's like, what do you want to do about superbugs that are developing because of overprescription and misuse of antibiotics? That might have been a pressing question, but instead, you know, we're saying, should we or should we not vaccinate our kids against fucking measles? So yeah, that's where we are in terms of the GOP and science, and we haven't even talked about climate change, of course, and that's not going to come. Well, it did sort of come up in the last debate where Marco Rubio was just like, something the economy, something, you know, just don't hurt the economy, so whatever. Let's not talk about the trillions upon trillions that were already being fucked over. Just go out to California. In fact, he made a joke. I'm in California. There's all these wildfires, so I got my water, but there's no climate change. So, yeah. Republicans and science. That'll have to be a whole episode in itself.
Yes.
Yeah, the irony of Dr. Ben Carson being one of the front runners. The thing that gets me is you have someone like Ted Cruz also. He always frames it in a religious perspective. It's the war against Christians and your religious values. You shouldn't be forced to, you know, prevent your child from spreading these diseases. It's, you know, that's an infringement on your religious beliefs.
Well, Rand Paul's a doctor too. Rand Paul's an MD. I think he was an optometrist or something. And he, a few months ago, was in on the anti-vaxxer thing and made the specious autism link. And it'll just never go away. It's amazing. It just will not go away.
What's so infuriating about it is that it's not like it's not isolated to your child. It has nothing to do with the government making you do something to your child. It's about herd immunity and other children, and the entire health of entire communities are at stake because you don't like the government. And Jenny McCarthy said that her kid was shut up. Just vaccinate your fucking kids and get over it. Done. Should not. And you know what, if you don't want to vaccinate your kids, fine, but they can't go to public schools, they can't go to public daycares, they can't do any of that. You have to vaccinate your dog to go to a dog park. You should have to vaccinate your kid to send them in public, period.
Yeah you have to vaccinate your dog to go to doggy daycare.
Yep. So
and then your dog gets autism and it's against your beliefs and
apparently, yes.
you wouldn't know if my dog's
how would you
autism.
Know yeah, that's a good question. How would you know? I don't know.
I suppose if they like never got the joke and, you know, rocked back and forth a lot. I don't know. I don't know what dog autism looks like.
I'm gonna have to Google that. That's dog. All right, I'll explain that search history to my wife later. Why were you looking for dogs with autism? never mind. It's for the show, honey.
It's what usually shows up in your search history.
Yes.
That's sorry. It. Sorry.
That's the only way the word dog comes up. So, yeah, what else? What else is happening in the news that is crazy and ridiculous and we haven't talked about yet?
The lady in Kentucky is still sort of trying to break the law, but not really. I've kind of actually lost touch the last few days with what the latest on that is.
I have an update on that.
Oh.
So she is not issuing marriage licenses, of course, but she is allowing her deputies to issue marriage licenses. And so a study was done to find out if they had been following the law, and they found that only one marriage license had been rejected. And that was a man who came in who wanted to marry Jesus. This is not a joke. It's serious. And they said, well, in order to get married, both parties have to be present. And of course, Jesus is always
present. He's everywhere.
He's everywhere. And so he came back. He left. Came back with the power of attorney, which said he was allowed to sign Jesus' name. And they rejected that as well by saying that for the power of attorney to matter, he'd have to be present to do that. And also, you have to have both parties present to have a marriage. And so he was sent away. But that's the latest news for the Kim Davis gay marriage license, Kentucky.
Yeah, and I thought her lawyer said, like, okay, yeah, she won't sign off on him and the deputy clerk will, but then that means the marriages aren't really valid or something like that.
Yeah, her lawyers were – they're trying to stay in the news essentially, yeah. And so they were saying, like, we're not saying what she will or won't do and she won't do it and da-da-da, but that came back as just nonsense.
So when that blows over, I think that'll be the end of the Mike Huckabee campaign because that's all he's running on anymore.
Yeah. Well, and she'll get a book and then she'll go on Fox News and whatever. But yeah, I agree.
She'll get a reality show because doesn't she have like 4 ex-husbands? So maybe they'll all live together.
That would be amazing.
And then they'll have a reality show.
That would be amazing.
My 4 husbands.
Yes. I think she should move into like a Big Brother thing, but with Josh Duggar or the Duggar family. And
just all the most vile, repulsive conservative people in the news in the last year. Jared, the guy from Subway. We
can put Jared from Subway. The two people from Michigan, the Tea Partiers, who concocted the fake gay sex scandal to deflect from the real sex scandal.
Right. The guy who spray painted Black Lives Matters onto his own car to get insurance money for the truck. Did you hear this?
Yeah. And then claimed that black people vandalized
his car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Black Lives Matter really wants to, you know, hit some redneck truck.
In the white. Why? What? No.
Didn't think that one through. That was in Texas, of course, because Texas. Wow. Oh, what about – this has become a political thing now. The kid in Irving, a suburb of the wonderful metroplex that is Dallas, brought a homemade clock to school. And
Ahmed Mohammed,
they
yes.
decided it was a bomb, and the kid's got a Muslim name. So, you know, of course it must have been a bomb. And now it's a political football, and even non-right-wingers are getting in on the act, like Richard Dawkins and Bill Maher are like – yeah, you know, the kid was brown skin. Maybe it was – I don't know what the hell they're even saying. But it was Sarah Palin – well, Bristol Palin said that the president should get involved. And then Sarah Palin went to the next level and said basically like it probably was a bomb or something ridiculous like that.
Yes.
But yeah.
And the cops are like, we arrested him because he wouldn't tell us that it was a bomb. He just wouldn't tell us it was anything other than a clock. And you're like, because it was a clock. That's – because it was a fucking clock. That's why he wouldn't tell you it was a bomb. You wanted him to tell you it was a bomb.
Well, and
he wouldn't do it.
You're expecting the American people, let alone the police force, to understand when you have a silicone circuit board and a few wires and a digital clock display that a bomb does not make. if there's no actual explosives connected to your device. I guess they wanted to say, well, it looked like it was a hoax bomb.
Yeah.
Which, yes, that's a thing that if a kid brought that to scare people should be prosecuted. But there's no evidence that that was the kid's intention whatsoever.
No.
So
he went to his teacher to show his teacher something he had made because he was proud of it.
Yeah.
And his teacher is a racist piece of shit and called the cops and said, it's very suspicious. He said, it's a clock. Here, it's a clock.
I, you know what? If I can – and Pierre, you can probably relate to this. If I'm a teacher and I've been drilled with like all this, like, you know, don't be overly cautious. If a kid brings something that looks like a weapon or looks like a bomb, like, and I think the first teacher said, you better put that away. That kind of looks like a bomb. And then later the teacher was like, oh, I think I better report this because if I don't, I could get in trouble. It might have been more of that kind of thing. And then throw in some, you know, Mayberry racist cop who was like, oh, it's that Muslim kid. I knew it. And then, yeah.
The administration, maybe. Yeah.
You probably just snowball more than anything. I can relate to being a teacher and having kids, you know, show me things they probably shouldn't have shown, but I cannot relate to the, you know, being a racist piece of shit. So I don't think I would have reacted that way, you know, because it's ridiculous. And if you look at the picture of the thing, it doesn't really even look like a clock, much less a bomb. But I mean, really,
yeah, it looks like a circuit board that. you hooked some wires to up to a digital clock display, you know, and
they legitimately thought it was a bomb. They would have evacuated the school, and they would have called like bomb people, and it would have been a bomb thing. I mean, I guess they're coming back and saying, "Well, we thought it was a hoax bomb, is why they didn't do those things." But if there was legitimate concern that this kid had built a bomb, the reaction would have been very different, I think.
Right.
Whose reaction is that? Oh, it's a bomb that a teenager made. I mean, who thinks that way? I guess I can't relate to that.
Look,
because
common sense could have prevailed. They could have pulled this kid into the office with the school resource officer and the principal and said, "Look, I know you're a little inventor and you like to invent cool things, but this little digital display and these wires and this like looks like a countdown clock, some people might take it the wrong way. Don't bring stuff like this to school." And the kid would have been like, "Okay, fine," and that would have been the end of it.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that. Instead, they had to cuff the kid and give him a fucking mugshot, and now here's where we are. And the president president has become my favorite troll of all time now, because he knew what kind of reaction this was going to get. Said, "Hey, that's cool. I'm going to come to the White House." And so of course that's gonna set off Sarah Palin and the rest of them.
Yep.
And it did.
Yep.
So, hats off to my favorite trolling president. And MIT and I think some other places have been said, "Hey, we're looking for inventive, smart kids who can put this stuff together." I think Grant Imahara of Mythbusters, tweeted out, "This is exactly the kind of stuff I was making as a kid."
Yep.
This is so cool.
Google had invited him to come to some sort of science fair thing.
Right. Nerds that build stuff get it. And I was one of those nerds. I had like one of those little science sets where exactly like this, you have a little circuit board, you hook the different wires together and put in the transistors, and you can make like a beacon light and a little mini radio station and all that crap. So, but respect. It's this is really more of an attack on nerds than
well, that's what's funny is the nerd community, like they don't even care about the political side of it. That they were outraged that it passed as an invention that could be conceived as a bomb. This didn't even resemble a good clock. Like, he just took parts out of something, brought it in. Like, that's not a proper clock. Like, okay, seriously. So they were outraged at him getting credit for being so tech savvy when he really wasn't. But
no, and I think Richard Dawkins said that he thinks the kid knew he planned it all along, and he knew what the reaction was going to be. And he somehow knew he'd be arrested and invited to the White House by bringing his homemade clock.
Ridiculous.
And I'm just thinking, this guy's fucking insane, Richard Dawkins. Smart guy, but insane.
Yep.
And a dick.
And a dick. Famous asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could sum up the whole Republican debate as well. So, All right, I think we've covered quite a bit of topics today. I want to definitely thank Rachel for being on with us, for taking over as new co-host. Anything you want to talk about before we go, because we've been on here for, I think, over an hour. Any closing thoughts, either one of you?
Bobby Jindal, Gilmore, and or... Rand Paul will be the next to drop out. As if anybody gives a fuck.
Yeah, agreed. I'm going to say Gilmore for sure. And then, I go Jindal.
You know what? I'm going to agree. I had forgotten Bobby Jindal still existed as well. I love how Rand Paul was immediately attacked for his 1% and how he was basically told to stay in the corner by Trump in the first minutes of the debate.
Well, Rand Paul actually made some semi-reasonable arguments in that debate, so I kind of figured, that's probably the end of him.
Yeah.
But
you know what? I'm seeing more and more there that the press really, really wants somebody else to come along here, and they say Fiorina's rising and Carson's holding steady.
They're getting sick of Trump. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's starting. I see the signs. So
here's another prediction. I'm sorry to cut you off, but that's what I do.
Yeah.
The next big scandal, manufactured probably, will not be about Hillary. It'll be about Bernie. Because I think enough people on the right are getting nervous with the idea of President Bernie Sanders that they think they better go after him more than just calling him a socialist. So they'll dig up some college paper or some speech he made or something and try to blow it up into a big scandal.
Hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. So giving him some credit, they might actually perceive him as a threat. Well, you can't, you know, use socialist as a dirty word against him because he comes out and says, "Yeah, I'm a socialist." Like, you know, what are you gonna do about it? So
yeah, I'm a socialist, and here's what that means. Yeah. Which of course the media will never do. They'll just be like, "Everybody hates Obamacare," and you know, whatever, and they won't like stop it. Or "Everybody hates the Iran deal." When we call people and say, "Do you like that Iran deal?" "Nope. Oh, see, 85% don't like it." And then when they explain, like, there was a comprehensive plan with you know, 10 countries that said, "We'll do this, this, and that. Do you like that?" And guess, hey, 70% people say yes. But, you know, the media doesn't do that, but Bernie does. Bernie says, "Yeah, I'm a socialist. Here's what that means. It means you keep getting Social Security and Medicaid, and we expand those things." And
we're
people
gonna
like,
work on your student loans.
Yeah,
we're
yeah.
help you with your debt, and we're going to hold Wall Street accountable and redistribute
people,
wealth.
And, yeah. And people are like, "Oh, that actually sounds pretty
great.
Good."
Yeah.
Some people. But yeah, I think that's one of the best outcomes of this campaign so far is, you know, whether he winds up with a nomination or not, you know, socialism maybe won't be quite as a dirty word as it has been. So,
what's your prediction then, Pierre?
No, I think I see the signs. I think I'm going to go probably along with Rachel and say it might be 2016 calendar year, but I think it's pretty close to the beginning of the end for Trump because, yeah, people are just getting tired of it and the debates are just, you know, exposing him more and more. So,
and I don't think he has anything new to add. You know, what new is he going to bring to the table?
No, he'll find another a different minority group to insult and.
right.
That's
he'll
it.
Jump on the Muslims. He hasn't really said too much about the Muslims yet, other than inferring Obama might be one. So
yeah.
So, all right. Well, this has been another rousing edition of Irreverent Testimony. Catch us on iTunes, Stitcher, and look for us again soon in the near future. I have been
one more.
Pierre, go ahead.
I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And one postscript, in 5 days or so, we might have a government shutdown over Planned Parenthood. So, oh boy, will we have a lot to talk about then.
All right. I look forward to it. all right. That's it. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Adios.